Welcome back, everyone, to the Fantasy Crossover Podcast. It is your host, Danny Duarte, joined by my co-host, Brian Acevedo. And guys, before we kick off the recap of the weekend games, and just most series are at four games, if not, starting their fourth game, we want to give a quick highlight of recent news that just dropped. Ja Morant was just awarded the Most Improved Player of the Year award. At the end of the day, the finalists were Ja Morant, Darius Garland, and DeJounte Murray. I think that given the fact that Ja Morant started the All-Star game and just the obscene run that he kind of led Memphis on in order to finish with the second seed, it was very well deserved. And, you know, he really did deserve that recognition, seeing how he didn't get any MVP votes to be a finalist. So, yeah, Brian, what are your thoughts? I think that he was the best candidate out of the entire pool, and it's just the sky's the limit for him proving us wrong.
I'll be honest, Dan, I'm a little surprised, actually. I kind of thought DeJounte had an opportunity to win it. Obviously, Ja is the big name, the star of the list, so I'm not surprised that he got it. Obviously, the Grizz finished with the best record out of all these teams, so that's probably a big reason why he got it. It's just kind of weird that a Rookie of the Year wins Most Improved 2 years later. It's an interesting concept to me to think about that. I mean, obviously, Ja improved in a lot of categories, but to me, man, DeJounte, if you look at his categories, field goal percentage went up, free throw percentage went up, rebounds, assists, steals, points, every category went up. Obviously, the team that he's on is not as deep as the Memphis Grizzlies, but I think DeJounte is a guy that was a sleeper this year. And I mean, he is a finalist, so obviously there's no snub there, but I would like to see him definitely get recognition next year for some of the work he's been putting in with those triple doubles.
What kind of recognition are you looking for?
I don't know. Maybe he's a Most Improved Player of the Year next year if he can continue to improve, because he's gotten better every single year that he's been in the league. And if there's no breakaway candidate next year, I mean, we could easily see him potentially win it with a good year. I don't know. I think he's going to get an All-Star selection again next year. And I think we're going to see what goes on.
I think that he's ultimately going to he's going to essentially need or claim max contract extension value at the end of the day on an open market. So I think that is going to be the recognition in and of itself more than anything else. But to your earlier point, I just think that ultimately Ja won this due to his team being the most successful and winningest of the three, compared to Darius's Cleveland Cavaliers or DeJounte San Antonio Spurs. Neither one of them made the playoffs. So I thought it was a clear-cut choice, in my opinion, that Ja should win it. Even though, to your point, it is weird that he did have Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
It just shows how much he improved at the end of the day. But anyways, guys, again, we love the fact that Ja proved both of us wrong at the beginning of this year with our fantasy predictions. He definitely blew those projections out of the water. And let's see if he can continue to surprise and impress us. But we're going to transition over to the playoffs, what's going on right now in the NBA world. The first thing that we want to cover is the craziest matchup, probably the most unlikely of all series that is being discussed right now. That is the Boston Celtics and the Brooklyn Nets. Boston is currently up 3-0 on the Brooklyn Nets. They just stole a game on KD and Kyrie's home court, and it's looking like Brooklyn might be swept tonight, possibly. Brian, what are your thoughts with just how Brooklyn has essentially, I hate to use this word, but I can't find a better definition, collapsed in this playoff run? And what do you make of all the dysfunction that the media seems to be painting Brooklyn with?
Danny, you say it with such disgust. I can hear it in your voice, but I'm excited to hear your response shortly. But obviously, Brooklyn, to me, is the second most disappointing team of the playoffs or of the season. I think the LA Lakers story, I think, is still a little bit of a bigger disappointment. However, there's no question from the beginning of the season, everything with Kyrie and all that has kind of led to this final situation where they're at now, where they're struggling to gel right at the most important time of the season. They're going up against a Boston Celtics team that is really dialed in, obviously hyper-focused, and showing that KD and Kyrie against a team like this is just not going to be enough. Bruce Brown has played well, but it doesn't feel like Steve Nash has really ever found that perfect rotation of players. And then obviously missing a guy like Ben Simmons, it remains to be seen. Obviously, they're going to need a lot of time together before we can really gauge what that's going to look like. But it's been the most disappointing season for them. And I'd say Ben Simmons, Dan, has been the most disappointing player all season. No question. I don't know. What do you think?
One, I think that this tarnishes KD's legacy, kind of like the 2011 finals did for LeBron. You just can't, this is one of those asterisks you can't overlook. This is one of those blemishes you just can't cover up at the end of the day. KD left an amazing situation to go do it on his own, and look at where he's at right now. Two back-to-back seasons where he doesn't advance in the Eastern Conference with the team he decided to construct. I do think that regardless of what the reports say with Nash not being on the hot seat, given everything that's going on, I think that I would have him on a very short leash heading into next year. If they do decide to keep him, I mean, things can change in the offseason, but if they do, he should be on a short leash given his lack of creativity with this lineup. He depends way too heavily on his two superstars, and their fatigue is starting to show in this series. And you hit the nail on the head, man. I am disappointed in Ben Simmons in so many ways. I hate to think poorly on a player, especially when it comes to their physical and mental health. But at this point, he hasn't said anything publicly that kind of persuades me to believe that he is bought in, that he wants to contribute. It just seems like he's showing face more often than not, and I just don't appreciate that. And I feel like no one in the NBA does appreciate that either. And he definitely needs to do some relationship repairing at this point, given what he's done with the Nets. So I think that I ultimately think that Brooklyn probably takes game four just to kind of put some respect on their name and ultimately go down in pride. But it's going to be a gentleman's sweep in my eyes with the emergence of superstar Jason Tatum and just a great Boston Celtics team.
Yeah. And Dan, just lastly on Ben Simmons and Kyrie, I think it's no surprise that those two players have shown a propensity to collect their money, go get those checks. But when it comes to game time, they're not exactly the first one out there, if you know what I mean. And that, to me, is the worst kind of guy I would want to have on my roster, no matter how talented they are. And then lastly, with KD, I mean, this is his legacy on the line at this point, I would say. I mean, I hate to put so much on one series, but he's going to take a brunt of the criticism for all this as well. It just kind of feels like KD, the basketball player, Dan, is suffering because of the real KD's inability to judge good character. And by choosing to play with Kyrie Irving, you kind of made your bed, so to speak, because you know what you're going to get with him. You know the character issues. You know all the games missed. It's the risk you're taking by leaving a dynasty in Golden State. So I don't know. It's a crazy situation.
Shouldn't KD, the basketball player, shouldn't his legacy be reflected by KD, the leader, at the end of the day, though?
I agree. And it's a question on his – this series is a big question on KD's leadership, because to me, he is basically allowing Kyrie to, take over the season. Like, this whole season for Brooklyn, completely forget that KD carried them while James Harden had his hamstring injury and he was missing games. KD carried this team for the bulk of the year while he was healthy. And, now he's playing 40-plus minutes in the playoffs. That to me, man, you can't let Kyrie dictate that situation like that. It's tough. I know the whole vaccine thing, but that right there, to me, KD allowing him to play part-time and being okay with that, to me, him as a leader, he failed because he allowed Kyrie to set the example that high. And you're number two. Like, when Kyrie's the number two guy on the team, he should have a higher standard than that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that this season was a wash from the beginning, given everything that was going on. We just got to hope for better. And it's going to be interesting. The Nets have a lot of interesting offseason moves. I think you and I both agree they're pretty much done in these playoffs. What do they do with Bruce Brown? He's definitely going to want some money. What do they do with Kyrie Irving? I wouldn't sign him to a long extension, maybe a hefty extension for 1 year, but definitely not a long one. And honestly, what do you do with Ben Simmons? Because this is a mess beyond anyone's original initial thoughts. So they have a lot of question marks.
My prediction of what's going to happen here with Brooklyn, I think they're going to have to at least give it a shot next year with this core, because they've already sunk so many resources into constructing this roster, which is obviously not great. I think they have no choice but to kind of go through with it, at least through the trade deadline, and see what they have. for the first half of the season. And honestly, Steve Nash, I think, is going to get another chance. I think they're going to have him on a really tight leash starting next year, but I think they want to at least give him an offseason with Ben Simmons, KD, Kyrie together, and see what he can do. It's tough. He's been dealt a tough hand also.
Yeah. It's a rough hand, and it's going to be interesting, man. I think that there's going to be a lot of offseason reflection going on amongst this Nets team.
Yeah. And to clarify, guys, I know a majority of the segment was based on the Brooklyn Nets. That is in no mean to snub or demean the Boston Celtics. I give them a ton of respect. They look scary. They look like a championship contender to me, Dan. I mean, I got to give them those props.
Yeah, you literally stole the words right out of my mouth. I was just going to compliment and kind of highlight Boston. I think that just how this team is clicking right now, and the Robert Williams essentially coming back at the right time, it's going to be a very difficult matchup for whoever comes out of the Bulls-Bucks series, which we're anticipating is going to be the Bucks. I think that that matchup is definitely going to be prime time, because you have two great all-around teams going head-to-head, and you don't know who is going to come out of that one at the end of the day.
Facts.
All right, guys. So that was quite the lengthy discussion, definitely centered around the Brooklyn Nets. But again, props to Boston. They have a lot of really good, talented players coming up. The next series we want to focus on is actually surrounding several good and up-and-coming players. It is the Minnesota Timberwolves versus the Memphis Grizzlies. So that series is evened up 2-2, heading back to Memphis for game 5. Minnesota was able to just scrape by in game 4 and make it through, with Cat finally having a good game in the series. Brian, how do you feel about the series? I think that some people expected it to be gritty, such as myself. Others expected it to be over by now. What are your general thoughts on how this has played out?
So I'm torn. I think I knew it was going to be an exciting series. I'm rooting for the Timberwolves. As a fellow Dominican, I got to root for Cat. But I got to be honest, I think the Grizzlies are going to take this. It's going to be a nail biter, though. I think the Wolves are going to push this to 7 games. Definitely getting 7-game vibes from this series. They're both athletic. They're both young. They're hungry. I think either one of these teams is going to give Golden State some problems in the next round. I'm not saying they're going to beat Golden State, but I think they're going to give them some problems. They can run anybody off the floor. To me, they're both that good. My biggest question mark, I guess, concern with Minnesota is Anthony Edwards. He had a little bit of a non-contact injury scare in game 4. I think they need him at 100% to beat the Memphis Grizzlies. I think the Grizzlies have guys that can hit big shots. Desmond Bane and Dylan Brooks, like those two guys, Dan, they are fearless. They don't care. They will take any shot they see. And I like that about them. I think Memphis is just a slight edge to them. And I think also having home court in game 7, I think will definitely play a big factor in this series.
I love your take on just the fact that Anthony Edwards did go down. He was able to come back, but again, we just want to make sure that he's 100% in order to be able to give Minnesota a fighting chance. I want to pivot the discussion to a question that you and I, well, a point that you and I made earlier in the series. Karl Anthony Towns, he's been very disappointing for the majority of the series. Brian, do you think that Karl Anthony Towns is the future in Minnesota? I don't think that he is cut out to be the leader of this team. And to be quite honest, just given his lack of performance up until the last game, I don't know if he's like, he needs to be at 100% and like locked in order for this team to win. And I have doubts if he really can maintain that consistency throughout game 5 through 7.
So I think with Kat, I want to definitely have some perspective. He is 26 years old, so there's still plenty of time for him to develop into that leader that he can be. I think seeing him now as a basketball player, I think he can be the second best player on a championship team. I think it's just so hard as the NBA works now, as far as spacing and all that, it's very hard to have your best player be the big. And I think that's a big thing that might hold Kat back from being the guy. I think he definitely has some maturity things that he can work through. He's definitely very emotional. Like you see him when he's playing, like he plays really, really into the game. And I do love to see the passion. I do think ultimately though, Anthony Edwards is going to be that that guy. If Minnesota plays it smartly with him, I think he's going to be that 1A type of player that can lead you to a championship. But I would definitely build with Towns and Edwards. I think you build around these two, you find pieces that work. And then as far as games 5 through 7, the thing with Towns is his inconsistency lately has really scared me. He can give you 30 and 10, and then in the next game, he's just like a ghost. And that's the thing that I think Minnesota is going to really need from him. If you get big games from Towns, they could absolutely win 2 out of 3. I think he's going to give you 1 out of 3 good games, and that's going to be ultimately the deciding factor in the series.
Yeah, you and I are completely on the same page there, man. Cat, unfortunately, he's shown more inconsistency than not. I agree. I think it's ultimately going to be Anthony Edwards' team moving forward. He just has that it factor that you and I are both expecting, and that will to win, that you just don't see the same level of hunger come from Cat, unfortunately. So let's wait and see. I think that foul trouble is definitely his biggest concern, and he just hasn't shown us any reason to believe that he's going to get it locked down in the next couple games. So unfortunately, I had Minnesota winning in 7 games. I still hope for that to happen, but as the series has been playing out more and more with Cat's inconsistency, I see it flipping more to Memphis' side at this point.
Let's see. I'm rooting for Memphis. I'm rooting for Minnesota still, even though I picked Memphis. I would love to see Cat and Anthony Edwards in the second round and get some good playoff experience, but I think Memphis just has that slight edge.
I agree. That being said, guys, we're going to pivot to another series that's currently tied at 2-2 that none of us expected to be tied at 2-2. That is the Phoenix Suns with the New Orleans Pelicans. As you may know, Devin Booker is currently out, I believe indefinitely, with a hamstring injury, so we don't know when he's going to be coming back. That being said, though, it's surprising, man. I didn't expect Brandon Ingram to go off in game 4, but more surprisingly is the fact that both DeAndre Ayton and specifically Chris Paul, just they weren't there for their teams when they needed them. Chris Paul finished with only 4 points in this game. He went 42 minutes without, you know, making a basket. And on the other side, like I mentioned, Brandon Ingram stepped up. Jonas Valanciunas had an amazing monster game. And, you know, you're seeing contributions from role players like Jose Alvarado, Herb Jones, even CJ McCollum getting in there. I would not be surprised if Phoenix had a game taken away from them and lost home court. That is how gritty and grindy this Pelicans team is. And I think that they're ultimately getting into Chris Paul's heads and also the rest of the Phoenix Suns. Even Monty Williams called it out. They wanted it more. That plain and simple.
Oof, you never want to hear that. I know Monty Williams also called out the free throw discrepancy in game 4, I think it was. Like it was like 42-17. So we'll see if that maintains throughout the series. But yeah, you touched on it, Dan. Brandon Ingram is really coming out as a top scoring option, despite some great perimeter defense from the Suns all season. You also got to shout out CJ McCollum. I mean, this team, the Pelicans, did not come together like this, Dan, until he got there. So you really got to give him credit for kind of helping be one of those final pieces to put it all together. And also Alvarado and Herb Jones, they definitely have CP3 looking flustered. Those are two very interesting players to kind of throw at the point guard. So I still have faith that he's going to bounce back and figure it out. I think the Suns are going to get it done, but there is definitely no question the Pelicans match up really well against the Devin Booker-less Suns team. I mean, it is what it is. I did have a question for you, Dan, really quick. What do you think is more surprising, that the Suns-Pelicans is 2-2 or Celtics-Nets is
3-0? Probably the fact that the Suns-Pelicans is 2-2. I had severe doubts heading into the playoffs about Brooklyn as a team, Brooklyn as a squad. So, you know, if you were to tell me, hey, they're going to be down 3-0, given everything that's happened, I could see that happening. But with the Suns having as dominant of a regular season as they had, for you to tell me that they'd be tied 2-2 with the New Orleans Pelicans that barely scraped into the playoffs with a play-in game, yeah, I mean, that's just more surprising to me.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's just wild to see that those two series, if we had thought about it at the beginning, we'd be shocked by that one.
And, you know, I'm hoping for the best. I mean, I'm a huge CP3 guy. I want him to win a ring. But right now, it's something that Charles Barkley said. He's showing his age. He's showing Father Time's catching up to him, because he's having one great game, and then the next game, it's kind of down. His consistency is definitely starting to waver, and you can't blame the guy. I mean, he's been in the NBA for, I believe, 17 seasons, 18. So, you know, it's just, it was just a matter of time.
Yeah, I think they're missing Devin Booker quite a bit. I got to see a Suns team. It would just be so disappointing for the Suns to lose without Devin Booker out there. It just, I would like to see him return and, you know, give it his fair shot, because I think he wants to go back to the finals.
I think everyone would. So that being said, guys, we're going to transition into another series that is pretty, you know, close, given everything that's been going on. The Jazz versus the Mavs. Brian, the Utah Jazz, they made a game-winning basket. Donovan Mitchell lobbed to Rudy Gobert in the final seconds. It is going back to Dallas tied up. What are your thoughts on this series with Luka Doncic fully healthy, Jalen Brunson being a clear number two option to him, and, you know, Utah showing that they still have grit?
Yeah, I'll be honest, guys. I picked them before the start of the series. I got the Dallas Mavericks winning this. To me, with Luka back, there's no excuse for them not to win it. To be honest, I think they have the best player in the series. I think they have a slight advantage of coach as well, with Jason Kidd now. And I don't know. I have a hard time seeing Utah winning two out of the next three with Luka in the lineup. I just don't know how else to further break it down, Dan.
It's a hard series to really touch on because we've been discussing it for so long. Just, you know, what we believe are the biggest glaring weaknesses of Utah and how Dallas was exposing them prior to Luka even coming back. So we've definitely have discussed our feelings regarding both these teams. And, you know, I'm aligned with you, man. I wouldn't be surprised if Dallas just pulls out both these games. But at the same time, Utah can get hot and surprise anyone. I don't think either one of these teams will probably win the chip. But they'll definitely make either one of them will probably make the next series interesting.
Yeah, that I agree with. I think most of us would prefer to see the Mavs in the second round, though.
Yeah. Unless you're like a Utah Jazz fan or that one-off D Wade fan that, like, you know, roots for them. I just don't see anyone really rooting for Utah.
Yeah, I agree. Sorry, Jazz fans.
All right, guys, we're going to move on into the next series that has been a little bit more disappointing than we would have liked to, given injuries and just given players heating up at the right time. It's the Sixers versus the Raptors. Raptors were able to avoid the sweep, taking game four from Philadelphia. Pascal Siakam continues to have monster games. Fred VanVleet did go down with an injury, and it looks like he's probably not going to be back for the series, so it's going to be interesting. But we did see signs of Scottie Barnes just giving us life and showing up for his team, unlike another aforementioned player. So, you know, it's definitely been an interesting series. Brian, you and I are both aligned. Sixers are probably going to win it, if not in the next game, definitely the game after that. But I want to focus my attention and, well, our attention on the Sixers, particularly two things. Joel Embiid now has a ligament tear in his shooting hand, so he's going to have to play the rest of the playoffs with it. I want to ask you, one, do you think that is ultimately going to impact his play and just jeopardize Philadelphia's chances for winning a chip? And then two, I think we can both agree that James Harden has not been performing to the level of productivity we would have liked from him in the playoffs. What is your thoughts moving forward in probably the second round versus Heat, how things play out?
Yeah, so some good questions there. I think Embiid, as far as his injury goes, I mean, a torn ligament, guys, that's obviously a pretty serious scare. I think it's really admirable that he's pushing through and he's going to play through his games for his team. He's showing leadership, but unfortunately, I think him not at 100% is going to be a factor, especially in the second round when they probably play the Miami Heat. The Heat have obviously very physical team, and I think that's going to be a major, major storyline in that series. And it could obviously ultimately be the difference maker. I mean, a healthy Embiid, I think anybody would take him over just about any other player this season. So him not at full strength, I think, is definitely going to be a factor. And that obviously kind of perfectly lends into James Harden and him not being himself, or at least the prime James Harden that we're used to, is not allowing Philly to, in my opinion, reach their full potential. This is already a team that outside of Matisse Thybulle doesn't have a ton of great individual defenders. Obviously, Tobias Harris and Maxey have really come on strong lately, and like they've acclimated to the offense well, but we still haven't seen James Harden hit that peak level. And I just don't know if the Miami Heat is that team that he's going to turn it around against. That's really, I'm more doubtful than probable as far as that goes, but it could happen. It could definitely happen. James Harden's still a five-star player. I know we haven't seen it lately, but guys, let's not get it twisted. This is still a potential top 10 player in the league when healthy. And if he sees that Embiid's a little hobbled and he has to take a little more responsibility, I definitely see James Harden stepping up if he needs to.
Great comments, Brian. You know, no disrespect to the Toronto Raptors. They just got hit with an injury bug at the wrong time with some of their key players, unfortunately. But, you know, we anticipate Philly to move on, if not in the next game, definitely the game after that. Yeah. So, you know, you got to tip your hat to Toronto. Pretty successful season, in my opinion, given how they started off. And, you know, they have a very bright future with their current rotation and some of the other players that they're developing at this point.
They do have a bright future, Dan, but I'm going to slightly refute your point. I don't think it was just injuries was the reason that they're not advancing. I still don't think even fully healthy, they're beating a fully healthy Sixers team. But I know we disagreed about that at the beginning. I know you had Raptors in seven, so we'll leave that at that.
I mean, you know, they were injured and also unexpected players turned up. I expected Maxey to ball out. I did not expect Tobias Harris to showcase his max money at the right time. Ultimately,
he's doing it. That was
to me the biggest deciding factor. But again, I don't want to take anything away from the Sixers, but I definitely want to show love to Toronto, given that we, you know, from where they were last year to have a top five pick to now this year being in the playoffs, it's definitely a great turnaround in a 1 year span.
Yeah, it is.
All right, guys. We're going to transition to another Eastern Conference matchup. We have the Bulls with the Bucks. The Bucks just took a 3-1 lead against this Bulls team. Giannis and Drew Holiday went absolutely bananas. They got a contribution from an unlikely character, Grayson Allen, 27 points, just shot the lights out of the building. Brian, it's safe to say that this Bulls squad is just not in contention right now. But I want to focus my attention on the Bucks. This Bucks team without Chris Middleton is still looking fierce. Obviously, they're going to have an amazing matchup in the second round. What are your thoughts on them being, you know, matching up with Boston and just their overall play?
I think the Bucks have certainly stepped up since Middleton went out. I think that speaks volumes about them. They just have that next man up mentality. I think they're going to beat Boston personally, and that's still respect to Boston. I think that's going to be a 7-game series, but I think Milwaukee is just too good, even without Middleton. They just find different ways to beat you. Bobby Portis off the bench. I mean, Brooke Lopez is another stretch big that they have. Then you had Grayson Allen and Connaughton on the wings. Like, they just find different ways to get buckets, man. And Giannis is such a matchup problem. I mean, we're really getting to the point here where, I mean, I'll be honest, if Giannis wins the championship this season, to me, he becomes the best player in the NBA. We've seen enough at this point. Like, he is a matchup nightmare for most of these teams. So that's how I feel about the Bucks. I think they're gonna handle the Bulls here pretty quickly. My question to you really quickly, Dan, is actually about a Bulls player, DeMar DeRozan. Has this playoff series kind of changed the way you view his contract? Because I know a lot of people were talking a lot of smack during the regular season when he was going off dropping 30. So now that it's the playoffs, and I know they ran into the Bucks, but to only get one game in the first round of Chicago, how do you feel about DeRozan real quick?
I still think that DeRozan is a bargain for how much they're paying him. I mean, you look at some of the other notable high-value contracts in the NBA, and DeRozan definitely outperforms them on a nightly basis. I would have loved to see Lonzo Ball facilitating this Bulls offense. I think that's a very pivotal part that they're missing, just given, you know, he is the ball. He's a ball facilitator. He's a point guard for a reason. So I think if he were there, it would give us a better indication of how DeRozan would play, but we have to take a look. I mean, this would have been a sweep if it weren't for DeRozan, you know, playing hero ball and dropping 41 on the Bucks. So ultimately, yeah. I think that DeMar is, you know, he's proved his haters wrong. He's proved that he's worthy of the money, and that the Lakers should regret the fact that they didn't sign him. So you know, props to him. He had a couple of rough years in San Antonio, but kept his head high and he moved on to better opportunities. And I want to make it clear to the audience right now, I do believe that Giannis is the best player in the NBA. I've been thinking that since the beginning of the year. So Brian might be a little bit late to the bandwagon, but it's okay. You know,
not necessarily late. I'm just, you know, looking at the facts, but we still have to, I still have to see it again, to be honest. I'm not a prisoner of the moment, and, you know, one championship changes my mind on who's the best player in the world. So, you know, I want to see it done over a period of time. So, but actually, Dan, I do disagree with you on DeMar DeRozan. We can definitely talk about it more on a future episode, but I definitely think you're overhyping his value just a smidge. I do agree that having Alonzo would definitely be a game changer for the Bulls, but I think that they're paying a lot of money to a guy that's not getting him past the first or second round. So to me, that's not really worth the value. And I think he would have kept the Lakers kind of in cap hell, to be honest with you. So, but we should definitely discuss that on a future episode.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, let's take a look at the NBA landscape next time and see other contracts that are probably a little bit more of a price than his. Yeah. But we'll discuss
at his age, sure, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, we'll discuss it later. Guys, we're going to go on into the next series. It is the Heat versus the Hawks. Jimmy Butler had another outstanding game with Kyle Lowry sidelined. We had the Heat taking a commanding 3-1 lead against this this hobbled yet fully rostered Hawks team. So it's going to be really interesting. We expect the Heat to move on to the next round and, you know, have a very great matchup versus the Philadelphia 76ers. Brian, I'm concerned, though, as a Heat fan. We don't know when Kyle Lowry is going to come back. It is a hamstring injury. Those are tricky, and he is up there in age. I don't know. I still have the Heat beating the Sixers because I think they're a better, well-rounded team, but I worry because Kyle Lowry was going to be that lockdown guard defender for the Heat, so I do worry about his defensive contributions being sorely missed for the Heat.
Yeah, good point with Lowry. I think it's something to watch the schedule. I got to take a look at, you know, if the Heat win their next game and the Sixers win their next game, when game one would be, because that definitely plays a huge role as far as, you know, can Lowry get back quickly enough? Again, he's an older player, so he's going to go through these things, and it's usually going to take a little bit longer for him to come back than like an Anthony Edwards, for example. So let's definitely see what ends up going on there. But as far as this series goes, guy, I think the most important thing is that Trae Young has really been stopped completely by the Miami Heat defense. I mean, they made him look like a shell of himself. He looks like he's not confident out there. He doesn't really trust his teammates too much, or maybe too much. And that's really been the telltale sign. So props to the Miami Heat defense. Jimmy Butler's looking good, but I think they are going to need Kyle Lowry in that next series.
He's going to be the difference maker, unfortunately. I still think that the Heat could make it past the Sixers without him, but it's just going to be a much, much tougher series at the end of the day. And yeah, I mean, I hope he gets back sooner rather than later. That's simple. Yeah.
You don't want to rely on Gabe Vincent for too long either.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Good thing is we have Gabe Vincent, Victor Oladipo, but, you know, it's still not Kyle Lowry in the playoffs.
But yeah, that is true.
All right, guys. And then the last series, that's pretty much wrapped up at this point as well. It is the Warriors versus the Nuggets. Nikola Jokic did get some great contributions from his teammates, particularly Monte Morris in game four. They avoided the sweep, which would have been awful to see for a back-to-back MVP. I think he would have been the first MVP to get swept if that had happened. So props to him. Props to that Nugget squad. But Brian, you know, the Warriors, are they NBA championship contenders? I think that they are. This is a great roster. It's very well coached. And the emergence of Jordan Poole is just terrifying for any other team.
Yeah, it's crazy how many real championship contenders there are. And I definitely think the Warriors are one of them. They are back to like that Warriors ball of old, basically what we used to see. So there's no question with a healthy Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond, and obviously now Jordan Poole coming up and stepping up as another splash brother. This team is scary. I don't think anyone wants to run into them in the playoffs. And let me tell you, the Suns without D-Book, this to me, the Warriors become the favorite out of the West. So that's pretty much how I feel about it. We know what we're going to get from them. They're veterans. They've got a great coach. It's the best example you can get. So it would not surprise me at all to see him in the finals.
Remember, guys, KD left that for Brooklyn. So always remember that in the back of your head.
It's kind of cool. It's full circle. We started with Brooklyn. We ended with Golden State. And you see the polar opposite perspectives in the two teams.
It's a damn shame. But that about wraps it up for us, guys. It's going to be interesting moving forward. We are going to have some series that are done before other series. So next episode, which is going to come later this week on Friday, we're just going to jump into our round two predictions. And yeah, just kind of talk more as we know more brackets, more series are going to be ready to go. So we're just going to talk through what our predictions are for round two and possibly already have a game or two under our belts. You know, who knows with how the NBA schedule plays out. But yeah, that about wraps it up for this episode, guys. Make sure to keep interacting with us on our social networks. We definitely love the engagement you guys are giving us, your general thoughts on how these playoffs are playing out. And Brian, do you have any other parting thoughts?
No, just really quick, Dan, the odds have come out for the most likely NBA final showdown. It is Celtics versus Warriors is the most favored to be the likely NBA final showdown. So thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. I've learned to take these odd makers when it comes to the playoffs, with a grain of salt, cause they had the Brooklyn Nets being the second favorite to make the NBA finals. And look at how that blew up in their face.
That's true. Them and the Lakers.
But that about wraps it up for us, guys. You know, have a great one, and we will be in touch later this week.